Andy, my dude, have you heard of the magical website builder known as Squarespace?
Ugh, not another Squarespace ad. I feel like every podcast is sponsored by them.
Hey, don't knock it until you try it. Yes, okay, it is overhyped, but actually it lives up to the hype. Squarespace is like a website fairy godmother. With a click of a button, your site transforms into a beautiful masterpiece.
A website fairy godmother? That sounds interesting. What makes it so magical?
Well, for starters, those slick templates make anyone look like a professional web designer. Pick one, customize the colors and fonts to match your brand, and voila. Plus, the drag-and-drop fluid engine is so easy, your grandma could build a site on Squarespace.
Well, she did knit me a lovely scarf last Christmas. Maybe website design is next.
Exactly. And when you're ready to sell your Nana's handmade scarves online, Squarespace has built-in e-commerce. Add a store with one click, get flexible payment options, then watch those sales roll in. And when she wants to teach others her steezy scarf skills, Squarespace's new courses feature is just the ticket. Nana can set up her curriculum and enrollments and payments in a snap and become the next e-knitting influencer.
Ugh, wow, you really sold me with the grandma angle. Sign me up for that free trial.
Just go to thenextreel.com/Squarespace and transform your site into a beautiful Squarespace masterpiece.
Well, thanks, Pete. Even though it's overhyped, Squarespace actually sounds perfect for Nana's site's needs. Appreciate the warning on the ads, though. I'll brace myself next time I listen to a podcast.
Anytime. Let me know if you need any help getting that site up and running. Andy, can you believe we've almost hit 700 episodes of The Next Reel?
I know, it's crazy. And with all the other episodes in our family of podcasts, we are well over 1,200 episodes of movie conversation. It's really pretty amazing that we've gotten to have these in-depth movie chats every week for over a decade now.
And we couldn't have done it without our loyal community of film fans. Their support over the years has meant so much.
For sure. That reminds me, we should give the merch store a shout out. Buying shirts from thenextreel.com/merch is a great way listeners can continue to support the show. Plus, they get to sport our great designs.
Absolutely. I think sometimes folks forget we have a variety of shirts, mugs, phone cases, and more available. In fact, a great place to start is with a shirt sporting the Next Reel's logo.
We also have that classic Fast Times Spicoli Surf School tee, or the weirdly popular Rusty's European Tour shirt.
The one from National Lampoon's European Vacation. Why is that so popular?
Search me, but we have sold a ridiculous number of those. I guess there are a lot of Rusty's taking trips to Europe?
We're always adding new designs based on movies we've covered, like our brand new design for A Streetcar Named Desire, featuring a streetcar named Desire. So if you want to rep your love of TNR and films, head to thenextreel.com/merch.
Every purchase helps us continue to have these weekly in-depth conversations. So visit thenextreel.com/merch today.
And as always, thanks for listening and being a part of the Next Reel community. We've got lots more great movie chats coming your way.
It's showtime, folks. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Saturday Matinee from True Story FM, our weekly show where hosts from across the network gather to talk about news, reviews, new trailers, and the hotly debated weekly list challenge. I'm Ocean, your host this week, and today I am joined by the effervescent, fun-loving, and multi-talented Tommy Metz III.
I thought you were going to with the other guests. Thank you very much. Those were words. I appreciate it. It's a pleasure to be here.
And so handsome.
We are also joined today by the exciting, glowing, rambunctious, bearded wonder, Kyle
Olsen. I'm glowing!
Yeah, so welcome, gentlemen. Thank you. It's good to see you both today. Get to back together and talk about everything that's going on right now. So I'll let you guys. So I'll start with the opening salvo question. What do you guys? What are you watching right now? What are you into?
Well, Saturday morning. Well, I'd say the cartoons are done, right?
So early.
Why the biggest wake up this trip?
Hey, cartoons are never done for me.
Speaking of cartoons, then I actually have been going back to a classic, the show that never changes and yet never seems to need to. Scooby Doo. I'm working on a project that's related to Scooby Doo, and so I went back and watched the. I'm watching classic Scooby Doo cartoons.
Like, Like the ones from the 70s or some of the remakes?
No, all of them. So I'm like watching all of them. Like I'm doing, I have the full spectrum. So I'm watching the 60s one, the 80s ones, and actually the one they did in the late 2000s, which was phenomenal, by the way. If anyone was like, hey, I wonder if what would happen if Scooby-Doo is actually treated with a certain amount of respect, but still a cartoon and actually had real monsters. Scooby-Doo Mystery Incorporated is that show. It is like a 52-episode, almost anime epic, where the plot lines continue, the characters grow and change. They get into, like, Lovecraftian issues at one point. I mean, it is insane, and the animation is great, the acting is great. It's really good. So if you ever were sort of, like, don't want to go back to the corny of the original Scooby-Doo, check out Mystery Incorporated. It's really, really good.
I own it, but it's
out there somewhere. I mean, like
got it.
I mean, like it released on DVD. So I mean, even if you want to go to your library, they probably have it there too. But it's on services, I'm sure. But I didn't.
Got it.
It just occurred to top of me. I'm ill prepared to tell you where to go. So while you're talking about what you're watching, I will find out an answer.
Yeah. No, that sounds amazing. But I feel that I need my Scooby-Doo to always have it where if they stub their toe or get hit something, they can then hold the scream in and then blow it into an envelope or any other container, and then they will not scream. And then if you open the envelope, then you hear the sound scream. I thought that was that was one of my favorite parts of Scooby-Doo. But that sounds great, and I now I'm about to go find that. So what are you into, Tommy?
Well, first I want to say I only want Scooby-Doo episodes with bizarre guest stars like the Harlem Globetrotters
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to make this the Scooby-Doo show, but that show actually exists right now. There are new episodes of that. It's called Scooby-Doo and Guess Who, and it features like the stars of today. Like it's like Scooby-Doo meets LeBron. Like it's honest to God, they're in their second season. It is like celebrities and you know, like they have like classic ones too, but like real people like showing up and solving mysteries with the mystery gang. So yes, that show also exists. An answer to your earlier question, then we can stop talking about Scooby-Doo.
There's got to be with Mike Tyson.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah, a place that you wouldn't think would be safe for animation. HBO Max, that is who has Mystery Incorporated right now. So I would say, watch it while you can.
Yeah. You actually watch them, and you can watch them deleting episodes right after you. Yeah, like they've decided you're the last watcher. Like,
but wait, hold up.
But I wanted to go back and, I am behind, but I watched Elvis with my folks. I'm at on a trip with my folks for the most part. I'm back in my apartment just for tonight. But we watched Elvis, which was Lerman-tastic.
It was.
It was a lot of fun. It's too much movie.
Yes.
And it's insane. And Tom Hanks, I personally found very distracting.
Me too.
It was, and he got more and more less the Colonel and more Tom Hanks. And I wonder if that was like they redubbed his voice because people were like, enough. By the end, like the climactic elevator scene, that's not giving anything away, but he's like, it just sounds like Tom Hanks who ate way too much cream. And so I didn't care for that, but I thought the guy, the Austin Butler is a star. He was phenomenal. And they did some really cool stuff. It's worth it alone just for the cross-cutting between him learning his style from sort of a revival church as a child to in the studio to how it became. That was
Marvel Jr.
I would have been fine with just that. Yeah. And it was worth the price of admission.
I agree with all of those things. You're right. It is too much. Like I saw it with friend of the show, Rob Cabasco, and we're both sort of Elvis nerds. So we know a lot of the actual stuff. And I was fine with, it's a movie. So like fine with a little bit of like, that didn't really happen. And that's not the way these things went down. But we kind of got to the point where when he hits Vegas and does that amazing opening Vegas show, I was like, this is the end. Like you can like we know what happens from here on out. Like you could just like end it here and we could go out of the theater and we'd be like, that was the most amazing thing ever. And I'm like, there's like 45 minutes of this movie left and it's not going to be good. And it wasn't. It was just like from there on, it's just like it's just worse. And like even the movie worse and worse and just more depressing and stuff, too. I was like, oh, God, please let there be a revival or something at the end. And there is. But it was like, you really could have just cut that right out. And I think it would have been a much stronger movie. But I agree with you about Austin Butler. Like half an hour into the movie, he was Elvis. Like, I never once thought, this actor's doing a fantastic job. It was just like, that's Elvis on the screen. And then Tom Hanks
versus there's is Tom wearing Hanks.
A lot of
and there's Tom Hanks. And here comes Tom Hanks. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Look, and there's Tom Hanks again in the fat suit still. Okay, yeah. Great.
Does he know the camera can see him? He's not in this movie. So, yeah, I watched that. And then the other thing that I'm really excited to see, I can't see it till next week at some point, but is Barbarian.
Oh,
it's the new horror movie by Zach Cregger. It's his first time. He's one of the sketch comedy group people from The Whitest Kids You Know.
Oh,
and okay. He just came out. Justin Long, the Sarsgaard that plays Pennywise and some other people are in it. And the reviews for a horror movie are through the roof.
Okay.
It's like 78% on Metacritic. So I am. And someone picked it as the trailer. I think it was Pete, maybe for a SatMat. That's why it was on my radar. Mm. I'm so excited to see it.
I'm unaware. What's the premise of Barbarian?
Premise is a woman shows up at an Airbnb and someone is already there. And he's like, no, I rented it. And she's like, no, I rented it. And then he goes, okay, well, I'll take the couch. It's too weird to go outside. It's nighttime. So I'll take the couch. You take the bedroom. And then they close the door. And then nothing goes right after that, apparently. In the trailer, there's like a quick hint of like opening a door. And it seems like to be like a tunnel. Like the house is not what it seems. I don't know really anything about it. And it's supposed to be very twisty, very turny. And so, yeah, that's weird to bring up something I haven't seen, but I just wanted to put that on people's radar. I'm going to be seeing it and talking about it at length. The end. Ocean.
Well, I actually
conversations work.
Exactly. You know, I actually wanted to see Elvis. I haven't gotten to it yet because this past weekend we decided I got my kids to watch a movie with us as well. And so I was looking up looking around for the Jamie Foxx canceled movie.
Oh, right.
And then we saw on Netflix there was a movie called Day Shift.
Yes.
Which I don't know if you've heard of this or not.
It's on my list as well too.
It's a Jamie Foxx movie where he is effectively a vampire. He's a vampire hunter, and he's it has the your basic plot line of he's a kind of a working class vampire hunter, and he's hunting them to then earn money. But he's been thrown out of the union, which apparently the union is where you make the real money, and he needs to make some money because if he doesn't make $10,000 in a week, his wife and daughter are going to move to Florida, and he lives in California, so he needs to get back into the union and then hunt some vampires. And it has Dave Franco in it as well, who's comedic, and Snoop Dogg, who looks gigantic standing next to Jamie Foxx, because he was, I think he's 6'4", 6'5", and Jamie Foxx is not as tall as you think he is.
Right.
So when they stand next to each other, he looks huge next to him. But it's basically the movie is, you know, it's you know, mostly predictable in everything of what it's doing. It's a fun ride. My kids loved it. Just because they, once you kind of go with the ridiculousness that is being put forth on the screen, it's fun. And it's a fun, forgettable movie. You watch it for a couple hours, you have a good time, and then you never speak of it again. And that's kind of, I guess I'm violating now by speaking of it again, but you know, so, but yeah,
that's,
no, it
that's
was
a Netflix movie, so, like in its entirety.
Right.
It is. But yeah, but it was fun for what it was. And they did some interesting thing with the fight scenes with the vampires, like, cause they were basically like contortionists. A lot of them, they could like, you know, bend completely around and everything. And then all the different things that you'd have to do to try to kill them. And then they were almost universe building, cause they had different types of vampires. And then they started trying to explain briefly the politics between the different types of vampires, and it was like that was Charlie Brown's teacher, and you're kind of like, let's get back to the killing of the vampires, you know. So
that's it, because I know someone that had watched it, and his favorite part was the John Wickian kind of that they build a vampire universe and how it works with like everyday stuff, and how this kind of vampire does this, and that's I would be interested in that because I'm more into mythology stuff than
You're not a big vampire fan, right?
And I'm also not a big vampire fan. So if you're changing something, then I would be interested.
Well, if that's the case, then Tommy, what you want to do is jump ahead to minute 55 and then we'll watch it till minute 59. And then that's going to be the sum total.
That'll be my 4 minutes of heaven.
That's your 4 minutes of where they cover that. Cause they cover it and then it never matters again. It didn't matter before and it doesn't matter again later. So it's just in there. Like, I honestly think it's like sequel building. It's like, well, if we build a sequel and have another, you know, you've given a kernel of something you can build another movie on. But at the end of the day, it's just a are a kind of a riotously fun movie and entertaining to watch. And, you know, my kids love the jumping and fighting and the car chase scenes and all that.
There's a, there's actually another vampire movie that was an original Netflix one, too, that I watched a couple years ago. I think it was like earlier this year. I think it's like a 2021 mm-hmm. movie. I'm going to tell you about it, and then I'm going to tell you the title, because that's going to be the punchline. Okay. So the premise is that, like, this guy is our hero is basically subbing in for his brother driving a limo. So he's like the one who's it's an SUV limo, but like he's driving around, not really supposed to be. He's not really licensed, but he takes over, and it turns out the people that he's bringing around are these two vampire women who are basically running the town at this point. They're trying to take out all their competition, so they're having him drive them from place to place so they can murder their competition. And so then it's you know, of course, then they're also, they look young and sexy because that's the premise. Like it's a whole like a neon noir kind of thing. Everything is hyper saturated and, you know, stuff too. And then right. And they look like they're 18, except that they're actually like 200 and stuff too. And so then he's getting drawn into this strange world and stuff too. And it has that kind of CW thing. And it's called Night Teeth.
Night Teeth.
Yes.
Did they run out of words?
Is that explained in the movie? No, it is not.
Night teeth. Okay.
I assume that's like because sometimes the night has teeth or something, but like, yeah, well, it does take place at night, like, and they all have teeth, day. So night teeth. Well, some
night is teeth. That what they're calling the fangs? Like the no, like the fangs come out.
There's no explanation for it. I think it was really like, we have this script, we shot it, we don't know what to call it, and they just ran it through the vampire name generator, and they were like, "What's not taken?"
Yeah,
yeah, but it was a decent movie. It's the same kind of thing. It was like, I watched it, I enjoyed it. Like, I think Alfie Allen is sort of the big name in it. I'm trying to think. Somebody else has a cameo in one scene.
Blood Moon.
The woman from, name. I can't remember her name, is from that she was in the first Transformers movie. Megan Fox. Megan Fox has like one scene. Yeah. She's like one. Okay. She's like one of the rivals or whatever.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it's just like a, and I'm old. So like the people in there might be CW right. or TikTok stars, and I would have no idea. But you know, like, yeah. But yeah. You know, once again, decent. You know, Netflix vampires. Yeah. Decent movie. You'll there's worse ways to spend 2 hours.
And it's called Night Teeth.
It's called Night Teeth. Right. It's called Night Teeth. I know. The fact that I watched it, despite that, knowing it was called Night Teeth, I think is a testament to me and my open-mindedness.
Yes, it is. So, yeah, and also for me, the other thing that I just wanted to give a quick nod to is I'm almost done with the Umbrella Academy. I'm very impressed with how they're doing the third season. You know, because at the first season I loved, the second season I thought was okay. It was good ideas and it was well done. But I was like, you know, at the end of it, you know, it was kind of one of those shows where at the end of the second season, I was like, well, I'm good on this for a bit. And then third season came out and I actually waited a while before I actually started watching it. Now that I'm watching again, what they're doing with the story and how they're building it and how they're, you know, able to reinvent the idea of saving the world mm-hmm. over and over again. And then also have the characters that, you know,
and they're over it.
They're over it. Yeah. Cause for them, it's been like the last 28 days. Uh-huh. We keep saving the world over and over again. Like, we got to stop. Right. Yeah. So I have two episodes left to do left until I get to the finale. But it has been a delightful show to watch. And it's really interesting. And, you know, the changes they were able to do with the characters mm-hmm. by, like, have you seen it, Tommy? I don't want to.
No, I haven't.
Okay. So.
But I can take off my
head. No, that's fine. This isn't really wrecking things, but basically it's a cast of characters that they end up in the first season. They have, like, you know, the world is going to end, they have to save it. And then the second season, the world is going to end, we have to save it. Mm-hmm. And then this time they're the same deal, world's going to end, they have to save it. But they've jumped kind of where they are in time and in space, and it allows the characters to then grow in new ways, even when interacting with really the same characters from previous seasons. Mm-hmm. But those characters have been changed just slightly enough that allows a growth and change and differences in how the characters interact. And they keep it encapsulated in a you know, silly story. Like, there's the example is like, it's very comic booky. You have different, you know, fight scenes and battles and all that, where they're trying to, you know, do different things. And then there's one where they have a big, you know, big showdown between two groups, and they decide they're going to solve this the old way. And then they have a whole Footloose dance.
Oh, that was the best. That was the best because it comes out of nowhere.
For like 5 minutes. It goes on for a while.
Yeah, like, it's just a little gag. Like,
no, they stuck with it.
Like the whole song, like beginning to end, full choreography.
And they were doing the dances from Footloose. It was great. So anyway, the Umbrella Academy is the other thing.
The only thing you're about to hit my favorite episode of the season. Like the next episode is so good, and it's great because it takes a show that has built up that three seasons to be able to like have an episode this where without spoiling anything, it's just everybody just. They just breathe out, and it's just the characters just like hanging out. It's like 45 minutes of them just like, yeah, let's just talk about stuff. It's still riveting for a superhero show to actually have an episode where it's like, you know what? Let's just like get drunk and hang out. Marvel be like, oh God, no, something needs to explode. Like, it's okay. No, we can just listen to characters talk and we're fine.
Yeah, I think that's the last episode I saw. You're talking about the wedding.
Yes, the wedding. Okay, you have seen that.
Yes, the wedding. Yes, I absolutely love
that.
That's the last episode
I saw. I sort of watched Moon Knight and that at the same time, and I was like, Moon Knight is just like, we can't stop for a second. And I was like, no, you can. Yeah. Umbrella Academy just did a 45-minute episode of a wedding in a superhero show. They just played out the entire wedding. Yep. And it was fine. Yep. It was great. There's almost no powers or super fights or anything. It's just a straight up wedding episode.
Yes, I highly recommend it as well. So I guess one thing I want to make sure we talk about before we move on to our next topic is today, as we are recording this, to give you a peek behind the curtain, Queen Elizabeth II died today. And so I think that it's worth mentioning just on the one hand of where it's, the fact that I can't think of anyone else where, it's kind of a global event of her dying because, she's been the queen since World War II or the end of World War II. So that means while I have no facts to back this up, about 90% of the population has never known another Queen of England. And so, A, take a moment to say that. And then B, also then, also to tie it into movies, there is, I haven't seen a lot of Queen Elizabeth stuff. And I was through work conversations today about the royalty, was told that I needed to see The Crown repeatedly because I have no idea who's next. Is it Charles? Is it William? Are they skipping? Is it? I don't know what's going on. I don't understand royalty at all. I'm just like, you know what? They'll tell me in a few days and I'll be like, okay, that person now. Right. I remember seeing, go ahead.
Could be me.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Could be you.
Yeah.
I have no idea. And so, I like the movie The Queen because we talked about that for a bit and everything. And I thought Helen Mirren was great in it. And it was a great portrayal, of Queen Elizabeth, at least as far as I know, because, like I said, I'm not the biggest royal fan, but I thought that one was great. And for my personal taste, I wanted to take a moment to give a nod to Jeanette Charles, who has played Queen Elizabeth the most in the most movies of any other actress. And the movie she's played them in is National Lampoon's European Vacation, The Naked Gun from the Files of Police Squad, and the TV movie The Queen Special. She's also played it in Austin Powers. Austin Powers Gold Member. When I first thought of the Queen in movies, the Naked Gun scene was the first thing that popped in my head, and I thought, well, there has to be other movies that are, treating her like a real, more like a real person, and so that was, then I thought of the Queen.
But, interesting.
Quite a run, like the longest serving monarch in European history, so.
Exactly.
My daughter did a report on her in World War, her role in World War II, and it was like, she stepped up. Where a lot of people, ducked their duty. She was there, like, fixing jeeps and getting them back on the field. Like, she knew her stuff.
Yeah.
So.
Absolutely.
And this puts a good light on my King Ralph reboot. So I'm hoping, waiting for that to come in.
Awesome. Yeah. Well.
John Goodman's still available.
And there's definitely several other movies to watch that are all about royalty and the Queen and all that if you are into those things. So, gentlemen, would you like to discuss trailers?
Yay!
Well, certainly.
discuss trailers.
So before we dig into this, I'm fascinated by the selected trailers because we have certain personas that I think the people of the Saturday Matinee audience have come to expect. And I would say these trailers don't really reflect it shows that we have a lot more diversity of interest than you would at first think, just from the stereotype.
We're the real Umbrella Academy. Exactly. Yeah.
Umbrella Academy was inside us all along. yes. Right, so I got to go first. One of my favorite directors, who unfortunately, because of his choice of medium, does not get to work a whole lot, is Henry Selick. And so the trailer that I chose is his brand new one, which is called Wendell and Wild.
Who are you? What are you doing in my dream?
We are Wendell and Wild.
Who? Everyone's got demons. My demons have names.
So, obviously, Netflix has been killing a lot of animation projects lately. But luckily, this one was too far along to do it. So, you have the power of Key and Peele now has joined with Henry Selick in a weird, fun, new stop-motion animation. I love stop-motion animation. Does not get a lot of attention. Doesn't get a lot of movies out lately. But I'm excited to see what they do with this one when a girl's inner demons come to the real world. So, what did you guys think of the trailer?
I thought it looked great, and I am not an animation person. Okay. And I'm usually not that much of a stop-motion animation person. Is this bridging the line? Like, this looked very slick for stop-motion animation. It didn't seem as jerky as, like, say, Nightmare on Elm Street.
Nightmare on Elm Street.
The Nightmare Before Christmas. The Nightmare Before Christmas has a little bit more of that. You can tell that this seemed a little bit more fluid, which was interesting.
Oh, okay, good. As a positive, right?
Very much so. Okay. And it looked scary and it looks creepy. And I love the lights coming through the nun's eyes. Yeah. And I'm really glad that you put this on, because if I had heard that there was a new animated thing, I would not check it out. The only chance I would have had is if someone would have said Key and Peele were involved, or right. Jordan Peele. So I'm really excited. This looks outstanding.
Yeah. What do you think, Ocean?
Yeah, no, I saw it. It looks very intriguing. I like the voice actors. Mm-hmm. The story looks very different and new. In all honesty, everything about it looks great. And I feel I should want to see it.
It's September, sure, maybe October 1st. Yeah, exactly. The Halloween thing will kick in. You'll be like, oh, wait. Right,
exactly. Yeah. No, if my kids, I know I looked at it and I was like, yeah, if my kids like this, I would show it to them for something different. They're not really into the scary movies yet. As much as I try to show it to them, every time I do, they are, my oldest kind of like slasher flicks. And then my youngest is like nothing. He doesn't want nothing to do with anything that's going to scare them at any point. Yeah. So I think it'd be something different to show with them. And I just don't know that I'm going to get into it. And I have to own, it was a weird contradiction when I saw it. Cause I was like, I have to own this contradiction in my thoughts that I don't know whether or not I'll go see it, but it just looks fantastic. Right? Like everything about it looks great. And so, I know that if I were to see it, I don't think I'd be disappointed. I just don't know with everything, if I'll get to it or not, but yeah, no, it looks great. Oh yeah. So when does it drop?
You can watch it on September 11th. Coming that fast. Oh. I actually thought it was in October, but it turns out it's sooner than you'd expect.
So we can see it tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Awesome. Tomorrow. Great.
I'm there right now.
All right. Yes. All right, Tommy, you were next up to get your trailer in.
Hey, everybody. I was next up getting my trailer in. This is Tommy. And this film was on my radar mainly because I really liked the director. The director came onto the scene and In the Bedroom, which won a lot of awards. He was already an actor. And then he directed Little Children back in 2006, which I desperately loved, based on a book by, we'll never know what's his name. Doesn't matter. A very well-known author. And now over what? 2000, what's 22 minus 6?
This is not a math podcast. Yeah,
16.
16 whole years later, he's finally directed a new movie, and it is called I don't know. Tar? Tear?
It's E
and A with like a dash over the A and R. I'm going to give you here. Put all these in. Tar. Tear. Tire. Tire. Tubes.
Time is the thing. Time is the essential piece of interpretation. You cannot start without me. I start the clock. However, unlike a clock, sometimes my second hand stops, which means time stops. The reality is that it's not until I once again decide to raise that hand that time is allowed to continue marching along her very merry way.
Directed by Todd Fields, as I said, and starring the amazing Kate Blanchett, this is a sort of a biopic about someone that does not exist. It is a fictional international music conductor played by Kate Blanchett, and it's supposed to be – it's being advertised as a psychological drama. And I love the world of conducting. I find it weirdly entrancing, even before the movie like Whiplash, like Mr. Holland's Opus, anything involving conducting, for some reason, I always find it magnetic. And I think she seems really interesting in it. And it seems to have a real singular visual sort of look in existence. So I'm really interested in it. Did this hold any interest for you guys?
Well, obviously, Kate Blanchett always has an interest in me because I think she's phenomenal in everything she does. It actually reminded me in college when I took a course, one of the teachers introduced us to Philip Glass. And so he played Philip Glass. And so I got introduced to the concept, not only the work of Philip Glass, but also the concept of oral hallucinations at the same time. They're like, you're going to hear, I can't remember what the name of the piece was, but it was basically a chorus of people just singing 1, 2, 3, 4. They're saying the words 1, 2, 3, 4 over and over again, faster and faster and faster. And at a certain point, your brain just starts reinterpreting it as new things. It's not at all what you're hearing, but it basically, and it was fascinating. And so like when I was listening to this, that's what I was thinking about, because even though it's a like about an orchestra, the score is of human voices. So they're right. Actually, you're not hearing any actual like orchestral stuff, which she would be conducting. So I started thinking along those lines. And so that it sort of had that effect that I thought maybe this is going to be a sort of a surrealist woman going mad or something.
Right.
So, yeah, it's interesting. I'm curious to see what the actual story is when it is, because the trailer does not tell you a whole lot.
Which so. I'm a huge fan of.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. Cool. Ocean, what'd you think?
Oh, excuse me. I liked the idea of a control freak musical conductor with what seems like massive narcissism. at least that's what I got from the trailer. I also like the thing that I noticed as well from the trailer that I did and not expect was that the cast in the trailer it's very female heavy. And it's very and it's, you know, given the subject and, you know, my exposure to the subject in film, it's, you know, the roles that these women are playing in the trailer are traditionally dominated with male actors. You know, after I looked it up and on IMDb, I saw that, oh, there are actually other men in the movie, but it looked like, I found that to be kind of a refreshing change that I wasn't expecting to really even, you know, think about when I saw it. I do think that these type of movies, I know that I will need to be in the mood for what is going to be presented before I watch it. But there's enough there to make me want to see it.
Excellent. For those that are interested, again, it's called Territor Tour. We don don't know. And it comes out October 7th.
Yeah. And while we were doing this, I was trying to look up who the actor, who the author of the book was, because I read that as well. And I blanked on their name as well. But there's
Tom someone.
Everything seems to be about the movie. Like they don't. It's like they pretend the book didn't exist online. So Google has canceled the book.
Are you talking about Little Children? it's Tom Perotta. He also did The Leftovers that HBO made into a show.
And
he's done. He wrote Election, the film that Matthew Broderick and Duda was in. Yeah, he's great.
All right, I guess I will bring up the rear here with this. And I am actually a little surprised when I saw this that this movie had not been picked already. And this, so this movie, the plot is set in the 30s. It follows three friends who witness a murder, become suspects themselves, and uncover one of the most outrageous plots in American history. This is Amsterdam.
Harold, I don't know what you think you're doing. Excuse me. Hello. Got a dead white man in a box. Not even a casket. Doesn't even have a top on it. In a pine box of old wood. Who do you think's gonna get in trouble here?
Do me a favor. Try to be optimistic. You don't get here without things starting a long time ago. So, two soldiers and a nurse found ourselves in
Amsterdam.
We formed a pact, and we swore to protect each other, no matter what. That's the rich. We find ourselves in a situation where we're accused of killing someone, which is not true.
You and Woodman fled the scene.
The killer pointed at us.
We didn't do anything.
Why would you possibly think that was us? Well, there's not too many people that fit the description of a doctor looking for his eye on the ground with his black attorney.
Columbia Law School.
So Amsterdam stars pretty much every actor you've ever heard of. It's starring Christian Bale, Margot Robbie, John David Washington, Anya Taylor-Joy, Robert De Niro, Michael Shannon, and Chris Rock.
And Timothy Olyphant!
And Timothy Olyphant.
There's so many people in it.
There's so many people, exactly. I just listed off a bunch, yeah. And I left off people that I was like, I got tired of like typing names when I saw it. And it is written and directed by David O. Russell, and really what caught my eye with it is I do enjoy these type of movies. It looks like there's going to be some twists and turns. It looks like a slapsticky whodunit. It also looks like it kind of has multiple layers of where there's the whodunit element of it, and then kind of the interplay between the main characters, but also the dynamic of the three main characters and the three friends set in the 1930s, right? Where it's a time frame where, you know, that Christian Bale, Margot Robbie, and John David Washington, you would not think you'd see necessarily together, and, you know, in effect, the way the trailer's portraying it, bonded through life, at that time. And so I'm looking forward to kind of seeing what it is. I'm also looking forward to seeing a movie where I'm hopeful that I will not be able to figure out the ending at all. That when the ending happens, whatever the twist is, I want to be completely surprised and be like, what? When did Shaggy and Scooby show up? Right? whatever it is. But it looked very entertaining and well acted, to at least to me, from the trailer. So what did you guys think?
I'm a little worried about the David O. Russell of it all. I tend to run hot and cold on his stuff. Sometimes I think he's way on, and sometimes he hearts Huckabees. So it's really hard to tell. It seems like if you hadn't have told me this was a David Russell movie, I would have thought, oh, the Coen brothers are back. So that's kind of the vibe I think the trailer was going for. But there's a couple things I think they're going well for it. I think that Christian Bale is in a really interesting place in his career now. Like, it sort of post Batman, I kind of thought he was going to swerve into the Daniel Day-Lewis kind of thing of like, no, I did Batman. Now I'm going to do serious artsy stuff. And yet now he's like in Marvel movies and he's doing this. I'm like, oh, I think he's having a blast. Like, it's just, I just watch him in this thinking, oh, we're past the days of him yelling at crew people. Like, he's like settled into his like, oh, I'm a movie star and I can just have fun. And Margot Robbie's great and all this stuff too. So I'm hoping that the star power of it all will be it'll be a fun romp and stuff too, and not that we're not being sold something that doesn't actually exist in the real movie, that it's a real serious character drama, a lot of people fighting with each other thing. But then I also have an inherent resistance to movies named after places. Like, how dare you? Like, this is not all Amsterdam. Like, this is, at least in Bruges was in Bruges. It wasn't Bruges. Or like, that's a problem that I'm working on. So what did you think, Tommy?
I think it looks really like a lot of fun. And I'm always down to give David O. Russell, even though he seems to be like a jerk, the benefit of the doubt, at least to start things. I think he's a really quietly fascinating director that doesn't do as much in your face stuff. Like, he's toned down things since Three Kings, but there's always really arresting. you can tell that you're in safe hands, that it'll always be interesting and not necessarily won't be 100% good, but it'll always be a reason for the camera. He's very thoughtful about that stuff. So I'm really excited. I had forgotten that this was a thing. And so I'm really glad that you put it on the list because yeah. I'm very
yeah, excited. And you're right. It's a shame that it took this long. So I'm glad you did it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The release date for it is October 7th. And I believe theaters everywhere.
You know what else is coming out on October 7th? Tar Terror.
Tar
we can have a double feature. I can go Tar Terror and then Amsterdam. Yes. Oh, my goodness.
R. Yes. Yep. Like the Klingons would. Exactly.
Yeah. 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 Although it would be an interesting exercise after seeing the two trailers for that to then decide, well, which one do you watch first? Right? You know, so, yeah. Yeah. You know, and how much time do you need between movies?
You got to watch Tar first because one looks like a romp and one looks like it might be a drag.
Awesome. Today, of all days, so early. Is Disney Plus Day.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
And there are
also it's a Star Trek Day. Things. Just by the way,
it is also Star Trek Day.
It is this. Yes, it is. Just as a side note, this is the day that first contact happened when the Vulcans landed and first established relations with the humans. Just by the way, just so Disney doesn't have to think they own everything.
Okay. Remind me to get your lunch money from you later.
But I digress. Please continue on with the game.
Yeah. Remind me to hang you by your feet, shake the coins out of your
mouth. You wouldn't be the first.
Yeah, so then, okay, well, Disney does think they own everything. Mm-hmm. And so they are showing on, today's Disney Plus Day. And I don't know if you guys have seen anything about it today, because I've been looking some of the stuff online about it. It's they're going to drop Thor Love and Thunder on Disney Plus today, and then they're doing they're doing a deal for new subscribers. So if you are if you are listening to this and don't have Disney Plus, I'm not sure how, but if you don't, then you have the new deal. And then there's also a few other things that I did find interesting. Interesting with it, like they're having the documentary on the Obi-Wan series, mm-hmm. That's like a making of, and then the next new series dropping September 21st is Andor, mm-hmm. Which is the one about Cassian, thank you, yeah, Cassian and everything. So they're dropping that, and then other than that's a lot of different things about like the Cars movies that they're putting out, or then of course online there are complaints about why there's no Mandalorian season 3 trailer, because it's like, well, and then that's not being announced until 2023, but anyway, so it is an interesting day of all sorts of Disney stuff. So I don't know if you guys did see anything about it or heard about it at all today, or if it would get past your radar.
Past my radar, and I don't have Disney Plus. And I'm so emotional about it.
They have a deal for you there, Tommy.
What is it? You can specifically for you.
You can get it now for you can get it for dirt cheap for the really? Next couple months. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Right. It's like,
if you turn around, Bob Chapek is standing right behind you.
Exactly. I'll check it out.
Yeah. All right. Okay. And so, what I decided to do was, instead of going with my, norm of wanting all games to be hyper competitive.
Oh, I thought you said Batman related.
And I want winners and losers. Well, isn't everything Batman related? I don't know. Like, what are these non-Batman related things you speak of? Cause I don't, in my universe, he's everywhere. So instead of doing something along those lines, I decided to dust off an older type of game, which are bracket games.
Oh.
So where you two can work together.
We're a team.
To decide. Yes, you can work as a team to decide the fate of, we'll just say, the entire Disney Plus universe.
Oh, and boy.
So with Disney Plus, and part of everything about that they're announcing and going on, and also when you think of the Disney Plus, all the different properties they own, which is the Marvel, the Star Wars, the Pixar, and
National
all that.
Geographic.
Like, well, the National Geographic, exactly.
Everybody forgets ABC, that Fifth Island.
ABC, ESPN, everything, right? So, but there are lots and lots of heroes in a lot of these movies. And that's cool. But for me, personally, I find that movies become more or less interesting based on the villain.
Mm. Yep.
And so I thought I would do a game that I tentatively have titled the Disney villain, parentheses, and some other villains thrown in, no, game.
Got it.
You got it. I could not think of a pithy way to put all that together because it's mostly Disney villains.
What's the opposite of rolling off your tongue?
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, it's you're gonna stutter step all over this. But I decided to take some villains, and so I decided to also ask you gentlemen to decide between them who is the best one. And and if you're asking for what should I use as a criteria for best, whatever you want.
Okay.
Ooh. It's completely subjective. There are no rules, gentlemen. You can decide best any way you see fit.
I think we should decide before we begin.
Okay.
Because otherwise that way lies madness. So one option would be the scariest.
What about the winner of this one has to fight the newly thawed corpse of Walt Disney? Yeah, sure. No, it's King Kong versus Godzilla, you know, it's right. I guess, do you want to do battle royale style? Like who would be
the most, it could be scariest. It could be most intimidating. It could be,
who's worthy of their own origin movie? That seems to be what Disney Plus is doing.
Wow.
Oh, that's interesting.
Who's most worthy?
Yeah.
What if someone does have their own, do we have any reboot, villain origin baby? Movies? Okay. All right. Cool.
I mean, wow. We're about to have a brand new Tomb Raider, you know? It's,
I like this idea. So multifaceted or interesting.
Yes.
And that could be because they're so powerful
away
or so
from,
scary.
Away if from you the hero, more. Essentially.
I love it. Let's do it.
Okay.
All right.
Solo project. So like maybe if it's Maleficent, let's say, I assume she's on the list.
Yeah.
She would get a television series. So like, let's say solo project.
Got it. Okay.
Got it. Okay. All right. So thank you for bringing up a villain that I did not think of.
Oh, okay.
So,
good.
Yes.
she's had plenty of airtime.
So,
it's fine.
So, yeah. As I said, most of these are from Disney property. So, I started off with the first match is Marvel.
Okay.
I took two Marvel villains. So, the first one is the Red Skull from the Captain America, mm-hmm. the First Avenger, played by Hugo Weaving, mm-hmm. versus Killmonger from Black Panther, played by Michael B. Jordan.
You don't need to go any farther because I have a very strict no Nazis rule. So Killmonger advances. Sorry, Tommy, you've been overruled.
Well, I'm not going to go pro-Nazi. You've kind of backed me in a corner. So, yeah. Good job, okay, Killmonger. So, you've won this
also,
round.
Killmonger happens to be one of my favorite villains of all time. But
I love it.
Killmonger. Regardless of who Got you would it. Put up against.
Red he was Skull. Bumpy, right? Wasn't his skin bumpy?
Yes. His skin was bumpy, which freaked my wife out.
Because he had the different, he would carve a knife for each person that he killed.
Yeah.
That's what that was?
Yes.
Ritual scarification.
All right.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, scarification. And then I never really
knew. That's how he was mongering the kills.
Exactly. I don't know if they explained that was him. Is it just scarring or if it was the thing with keloids as well? Mm-hmm. Like that was who created the rays. So anyway. All right. Okay, so sticking with the tentpole Disney properties, staying with Star Wars, I'll start with Star Wars, and two villains, one of which I just decided to throw in and put stipulations around because he's so well known. So the first one, of course, is Kylo Ren, mm-hmm. From The Force Awakens, played by Adam Driver, versus, of course, Darth Vader, but only the Empire Strikes Back one. Played by David Prowse, voiced by James Earl Jones. Otherwise, with Darth Vader, it becomes like, you know, you can go everywhere. So I decided to just throw that. I'm just going to throw in random things.
I completely knocked you out of the last one, Tommy. So why don't you take the lead on this one?
I would vote for Darth Vader. Because Kylo Ren, I felt, was so sulky. He was just such a, like, when's my turn at the Xbox? So I personally vote for, because Darth Vader is just such an interminable force and seems to know exactly what he wants, and he's going to get it, girl. So I go for Darth Vader personally. What do you think?
I think I'm the opposite, actually. I think Darth Vader, the more Darth Vader shows up, I feel like the less interesting he gets. Like, the more we learn about him and the more we see him, the more I'm like, he's just a sad asthmatic. Like, I don't know, bad relationships. I mean, like, it's like, okay, sure, he has the Force, but so does everybody else. Like, what makes this guy special? Like, he's more machine than man. So, like.
Oh, right. It's supposed to be the most interesting character.
Yeah.
Oh, I already forgot our idea. Yeah, Kylo Ren has more going on. He has more facets to him instead of just
Is he whiny? Is he that? Yes, and that's what makes him so compelling to me, because like I love that he's a fanboy. He is an entitled fanboy, and he has tantrums, and like when he doesn't get his way, and he just wants to be like Darth Vader. Why can't he? And I find that fascinating.
Interesting. Okay, I will stipulate. Does that mean capitulate?
Yes,
I will,
it does.
Whatever. Okay, I will do all of those
and now
things.
We'll cohabitate. And I will say,
yes. Perfect. And now we should celebrate. Great.
So Kylo Ren moves on.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Okay.
But by the way, I don't know what the rest of your bracket looks like, but the fact that in round two, it's Kylo Ren versus Killmonger.
Killmonger, yes.
Man. Yeah. Like,
Well, the next matchup I really threw in because I was when I was thinking through this, I'm always a huge Marvel Star Wars fan, and I know Kyle you are as well. Mm-hmm. And Tommy, who does not have Disney Plus, I thought, well, that also needs to be some things in here for Tommy.
Thank you.
So these villains are villains where you really just don't see their face until the end. So this is in a left turn, completely away from the Disney Plus universe. It is a Jigsaw from the movie Saw, played by Tobin Bell, versus Ghostface in the movie Scream, played by both Skeet Ulrich and Matthew Lillard.
Okay, you're going right. To the original Scream. Okay.
Yes.
Interesting.
Spoilers for a 30-year-old movie.
I know. I was like, hey! I just put it in. interesting, because the Scream, the Ghostface are smart, and they're also physically capable.
True.
Jigsaw is not physically capable, but is extremely smart and is good at crafting.
Mm-hmm.
So
you might say he's the Batman of the horror world.
Right. I think I'm... Oh, okay, right. You want to know more about them. Probably. Yeah.
What do you think?
I think I would say, I was going to say the Ghostface because Jigsaw just needs so much prep time. But I would think that you do learn in later Jigsaw movies, in later Saw movies, a little bit more about him. But I think he's got so much going on. There's so much weird sadism, but also morality going on. There's a lot of. He's not just sort of killing people, and he's trying to save them.
True.
And so I think that's more interesting than just two homicidal teenagers just sort of running around. So I would personally vote for Jigsaw. Now tell me why we're going to vote for the other people.
No, actually, I think I agree with you. I mean, that's one thing I really – when Saw first came out – It was kind of like, oh, it's Cary Elwes and he cuts his foot off and, you know, like that, that was the whole thing. But it's like then I sort of dismissed it as, oh, it's just more horror porn. Like it's just torture porn. I mean, that torture whole porn. Thing. But then when I actually got to see it, I was like, oh, no, there's actually a lot more going on in Jigsaw than I really thought before. Like it was actually for being a very gory movie, it was really thoughtful. And I was like, surprised at that. Not to say that Scream wasn't, but in a different way. So, I would say Jigsaw as well, just because I would actually be interested to see, you know, the surprise of Jigsaw is how much time he did to see it from the other side of him, like, preparing these things. Of, like,
Jigsaw
what
Home
would
Depot?
Be the best way to get that guy and, like, you know, putting stuff together.
Yeah, and he's like, sorry, Jigsaw, we don't have it. Try Lowe's. And he's like, and he's just going from hardware store to hardware store.
Yeah. So Jigsaw. Yeah, so also a movie that I love. It was in a time of life where I didn't watch as many horror movies, and so then I saw that in the theater.
Oh, wow.
I saw that in the theater, in a mostly empty theater, by myself, which was not the best idea. I was freaked out for the rest of for the next several hours. So, but it was great. Okay, so then this next category are characters that are not the villain yet.
Ooh.
The first one is Eric Lenscher, better known as Magneto, played by Michael Fassbender in X-Men First Class. And the other one is Cruella DeVille, in the movie Cruella, played by Emma Stone.
Have you seen either of those, Tommy?
No. Okay. I was about to say, I think you may have to take this one. My apologies. Okay.
Well, okay. Yes, I have seen both things. I saw Cruella. I thought it was a fun, especially because it was set in the 70s and it had this sort of like Devil Wears Prada fashion vibe to it. But by the facts of the story of like the one thing we know about Cruella, this Cruella does not line up to the other one at all. Like in this one, she loves dogs at the beginning of the movie and still loves dogs at the end. I was like, but wait, your one defining characteristic is you are going to kill puppies for coats. And like this one would be like, no, she would never do that. Like, but that's, isn't that your, that's your deal, right? Isn't that your, so maybe. it didn't tonally sort of quite line up. And it's like, no, we're saving that for the sequel. No, you aren't.
Well, I think the same with part three, like maybe there's an emperor in part two that has a dark turn.
Right.
And then he hates puppies.
Yeah. I don't know. So in regards to my no Nazis rule, my Nazi hunter rule also comes into effect here too, because in the category of, yeah, you missed the good movie. The fact that they said, oh, by the way, Magneto spent some time hunting Nazis down in the 50s. You're like, wait, what? Hold on. Like, that's an aside? Why are we dealing with nuclear submarines? Magneto's hunting Nazis? Like, that's your movie? Like, show me that. I want six episodes of that. Him, like, hanging out in Brazil? Like, hunting? Come on. Yeah, so, yeah, actually, Eric has moved on.
Eric. All right, the Nazi hunter moves on. Yeah. Okay. And, okay, so the next title, which I changed right at the last minute, was Who Let These Clowns Into This Contest? The first one is, of course, the first villain you think of when I say that, the Joker from The Dark Knight, played by Heath Ledger, or Pennywise.
Yeah, I would have thought Pennywise.
Played by Bill Skarsgård. They had a really good rap battle, by the way, for those of you who haven't heard it. Yeah. Epic rap battles in history, Joker versus Pennywise. It's pretty awesome.
And we're talking about Joker,
Heath Ledger.
The movie, Todd Phillips movie.
We're talking about the Heath Ledger, The Dark Knight.
The Heath Ledger one. Heath Ledger. Okay, that makes it hard.
Right.
I'm a dog chasing cars, like that
Joker. Right. Exactly, yeah. Because in the regular Joker one, which I will full on own that I have never seen it. I don't know that I'm gonna.
You don't need to.
I don't think he's a villain in it, right? Isn't he just? It's an origin story of a character that doesn't need an origin.
Well, he does murder people, so I guess if that makes you a villain, then sure.
Okay.
But the real villain is society.
Okay, good. All right, there you go. So it's Taxi Driver.
It 95% is Taxi like Driver. They just like go, okay. And he also dresses the clown too.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Great.
Okay,
yeah. Here's your Oscar. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
But I digress. Right. But tell me, you have strong feelings about, but so that aside. So this is Heath Ledger's Joker, which I say probably is my favorite of all the Jokers, next to Mark Hamill from the anime series. But you have strong feelings about Pennywise. So my thought, obviously, is I'm a big Joker fan, but I'm also a big Pennywise fan because I read that book, you know, in, what, 87 or whatever it is that came out. So what are your feelings on Pennywise?
I think Pennywise, for me, because he is not bound to the same earthly realm as the Joker is. The Joker, granted, he has an enormous gang of thugs and endless access to jars of oil and that he can just put in every factory or whatever he wants. But Pennywise so can really...
toy factories.
Yeah, Pennywise can really do whatever he wants to a certain extent and even break the rules of his own movie. And I think the idea of the fact that he feeds off of and finds out what would really scare you the most, that's getting into Freddy Krueger territory, which I find always fascinating because he's using yourself against you versus the Joker, which kind of is doing some of that, but not as much, really. He just sort of wants to burn the world down. So I'm maybe voting for Pennywise, but I like this pair up. So if you'd like to go the other way, I would probably be easy to talk
through. Okay, I was just thinking. Okay, so origin story wise, like with if they had a you know before the makeup or whatever, I mean, both of them are well known for painting their faces. Would you like to see sort of Pennywise landing or crash landing or like I don't know how
I would
did,
like
did
to
he crash
see
land
him,
on Earth or did he like come through a dimensional rift?
No,
I don't.
He crash landed on Earth. I don't know the answer for that, but he was like a meteor that came down. I would like to see him like the show that's coming up. The Derry show of him, like the history of Derry throughout all the hundreds of years.
Yeah,
I'm more interested in.
I think that was an HBO Max show.
Oh, no, that's right. I'd be more interested in that than finding out what the origin of Joker is, because part of the interest of Joker is that you don't know his origin. They even play with that in him telling five different stories about where he comes from. So,
You know, by our criteria, I 100% agree.
I think
it's more interesting to me to see sort of as a, you know, just a young alien on the prowl, just like like walking around going, you know what? Clowns.
Yeah, like I would love to see him see his first clown.
He goes, like, walks by going, lumberjack? Sharp? No. Yeah. Cowboy? No. Clown.
Yeah. Clown. Yes.
Okay. And now we'll go back to Pixar. I picked a couple of Pixar villains. Which are, and I decided to go with villains that seemed the most kind of like they're villains. Because, you know, a lot of times with Pixar, the villain part is, you know, they're not, you know, you don't actively root against them all the time. So the two that I chose then to have you to weigh in on is Syndrome from the movie The Incredibles. Yep. Voiced by Jason Lee.
Syndrome.
Versus Sid from Toy Story. Voiced by Eric Von Detten.
Yeah.
Or Detten. I'm not sure the correct pronunciation of his name. We'll never know.
Both bad from birth. Both troubled children. Probably unsupervised way too much.
I don't remember Syndrome at all.
Syndrome was the one he idolized Mr. Incredible, wanted to be his sidekick, was a great inventor. Mr. Incredible told him, get lost, kid. And so he sort of internalized that and then decided that all superheroes had to go. And so devised a robot to murder them all so that he could become the ultimate hero.
Okay.
Right, interesting. Right, because if nobody's super, then everybody is.
And Sid, Sid is just a creep that's mean to his toys.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, torture toys. Yeah. Yes. And in a movie Toy Story, that would make him a villain.
Right.
True.
Everyday life, you wouldn't think twice about him. You'd just be like, well, you know,
he probably has a very successful TikTok following.
He probably does. Yes. He's probably an influencer. Like, it's as part of his
news
toys. Like, he destroys
the ones he doesn't watch. Watch explode.
What do you think? What are your initial thoughts?
I don't want to spend a lot of time with either of these guys, but I think Syndrome would be the more interesting one because you could kind of do a descent into madness sort of thing of like brilliant inventor and then like all this internal stuff or whatever slowly turns him into the thing. And please, Disney, this is not me pitching that. Please do not make this movie ever. We do not need to see that story. But given the choice between the two,
I'll go with Kyle. Yeah, because otherwise it's just a crappy kid. We pretty much know where crappy kids come from unless they're Kevin.
Yeah. All right. We need to talk about Kevin.
We do need to talk about that. Write that down.
And, and the next set of villains are villains that are not in the real world. So their effects will be felt
in
the real world.
Does Ocean think that Pixar movies are real? No. Oh, sorry. What was that? Just a small aside between me and Tommy. Go on. Continue your game.
He's outside just talking to his car.
I thought I heard some crazy talk.
Yeah.
All right. Not in the real world. The first is Agent Smith from The Matrix, played by Hugo Weaving, versus Freddy Krueger from A Nightmare on Elm Street, played by Robert Englund.
Good matchup.
Humanity is a virus, and we are the cure.
Agent Smith would have a lot more room to play with potentially. The reason that he becomes a bad code, that the reason why he wants to destroy his world from within could be really interesting of what got him there other than just his hatred of humans.
Well, I mean, spend an hour on the internet.
Yeah. Right. Oh, I see what you're saying. We're all Agent Smith now. Yeah.
I'm gonna give you three subreddits. Tell me you won't come out with the same philosophy.
Freddy Krueger, his original crime is so abhorrent. That might be quite
I don't want to see that at all.
Like whatever would make him do what he did
Isn't
a f- fun film. Mm-hmm. No. So for that reason, I might go with Computer McGee. What do you think? Okay.
Wait, are you telling me neither of you gentlemen think that Freddy Krueger could be made to be sympathetic?
Please no. Please don't. No, you don't understand. These kids were really awful. Yeah. Oh, no. Exactly. No.
None of them would sit still for the pictures.
And see, all of this helps justify Agent Smith.
Yeah.
It's like, you know what? Copper top, baby.
Yep.
Yeah. Right. So Agent Smith it is. Okay. And so since we started with Marvel in the first round, we will end with Marvel in the first round. And these two villains really just wanted peace. Right. Their ends were really just they wanted peace and harmony throughout the land. The first one is Ultron from the Avengers Age of Ultron, played by James Spader. And the second one is a little bit of a protest to me, and I'll explain why after I say it, but it is Thanos from Avengers Infinity War, played by Josh Brolin.
Are you saying that Thanos was right?
Thanos was the hero of that movie. To me, the villain in that movie is everybody else.
Well, he was the protagonist. I don't know that I would go so far as to say hero.
No, he is the hero. Thanos was a mild-mannered environmentalist that came up with a solution to help save the universe. And then he struggled and sacrificed to get to the place where he could have a tool to then finally fix the universe, does so, and overcomes all the usurpers that are trying to stop him from this utopian goal.
In the version of the movie you saw, Thanos was Bill Nye the Science Guy.
Instead
of homicidal Grimace.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Instead of homicidal Grimace. Uh-huh. Yeah.
So, yeah. Unfortunately, my apologies, I didn't see Iron Man 2. Is that where Ultron came from? No,
he's actually from Avengers Age of Ultron.
What?
Yeah. He's Avengers. The main enemy in Avengers 2.
I saw that. I don't remember him. I don't Thanos. He's a robot. Because if he can snap his fingers and make half the people disappear, he can snap his fingers and everyone gets soup.
Yes.
Like, or he can make no other things to eat. Yeah, there was other ways to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't care for that, because the whole time we'll just watching him inevitably come to a stupid decision.
Yeah.
Everyone should have soup. That was the fourth stone. What do you think?
I agree. I think that the fact that Thanos got a lot of screen time and Ultron did not. I think that kind of suffered for it. I would actually kind of like to see more of what James Spader was doing. I don't think it was a perfect portrayal in any way, shape, or form, but it was interesting. Sure. And I would kind of like to see what they would do if they got a chance to sort of remix it.
Ultron moves on, mm-hmm. which is fair, because Thanos is a hero. All right. Moving on.
We're not going to go back and are all of these different characters going to end up fighting each other?
We're just in round two.
Yeah, it'll get a lot faster from here.
It'll get a lot faster. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No. We'll speed up here.
Yeah. Got it.
All right. So the second round, Killmonger versus Kylo Ren.
It's got to be Killmonger.
I'll take it.
Yeah.
I agree.
Like, yeah, just because Killmonger is
All right. Jigsaw versus Eric Lencher or Magneto.
Oh, in any fight, Jigsaw has a lot of metal, and
but again, we're doing our origin story, not who would win in a fight. Magneto. I think the more interesting, personally, other than the Nazi part, would be Jigsaw. I think. Okay. I'm interested in that.
Okay, yeah, I mean, and we've seen the Magneto story a number of times, a number of mediums and stuff, too, and Jigsaw.
I just want to keep at least one actual human in this conversation for as long as we can.
Don't be a mutant racist. Homo superior, come on. Yeah, this is what Magneto's main point is, right here. Hashtag Magneto was right. Okay, so go on.
So true, yes, yeah. So Jigsaw?
Jigsaw.
Yeah. Is it we're going with? Jigsaw? Okay. Pennywise and Syndrome.
Oh, Pennywise. 100%.
Good.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Pennywise. Very much agreed. Ultron or Agent Smith?
Oh, now that's interesting. Wow. Because they both kind of have the same philosophy.
Hmm.
They both are like, hey, humanity is the problem.
Right.
Robots are way superior. I think Agent Smith is probably more philosophical about it, though. So I would kind of be interested in more of that way.
100% agree.
Yeah.
I love that.
All right.
But okay, you know, cast James Spader as one of the other robots, and I think the new problem solved.
Sure.
Yeah. All right. And in the final four, Killmonger versus Jigsaw.
We've come to Tommy's My Fandoms. Oh no.
No, I am fine
lock it and then make Ocean decide.
Oh, that's a good point. That's truth, how this
I
goes.
I don't want to have you compromise yourself, and I don't want to compromise myself because also I'm egotistical.
Jigsaw till I die.
Killmonger all day, all night.
Ocean.
So you want me to break this off?
Yeah.
Yep.
You have to.
And you have to live with the decision. What'd he say? Killmonger? That was
bury me in the ocean.
Yeah. 100%. I thought that his motivations and reasonings, while I think that his methods were misguided, his motivations and reasonings, not only from the trauma that he experienced, but then also, you know, kind of where he was going with it. The ideas, I don't think, were all wrong. I think that it was, with him, one of the larger problems was his method of execution. Yep. There might have been a better way to go about it. Now, he may not have he doesn't have the tool set to do that, nor would he necessarily know if he'd be successful that way. But yeah, I thought his ideal.
Did you see his What If episode?
Yes. Yeah, I know. Yeah. So
that was a fascinating exploration of what would happen if he was given all the resources.
Yeah. Yes, it was.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, that's a disappointing choice because historically old white men haven't had their stories told. And this was a chance to do this at Jigsaw. So really, I guess we're just keeping things moving. History repeats itself.
Oh, I'm glad you couldn't get to that without breaking because I know people would be like, yeah.
Okay. And joining Killmonger in the finals, will it be Pennywise or Agent Smith?
Oh, I think here we are again.
Yeah, I'm going to say Pennywise.
I'm going to say Agent Smith.
Ocean, you can't say Killmonger again.
I cannot say Killmonger again. So, and do I need to stick to your criteria or can I just make up my own? Like what?
You're the tiebreaker, so you don't even have to tell us why you made this.
Maybe you have to tell us the answer. Your game.
Yeah, exactly.
It's up to you.
I guess, yes. Okay. I feel that I know a lot about Agent Smith and I don't about Pennywise. I find Pennywise fascinating and interesting. So I'll go with Pennywise.
You know what you've just done, right?
Oh my goodness. Oh no. Pennywise versus Killmonger. That is a crossover.
Pennywise versus Killmonger. Uh-huh. Yeah.
I gotta go Pennywise.
Killmonger.
You just wanted to play this game by yourself.
Look what you've done.
This was not the intent. Whether the intent was for you two to come together as a team.
All right, we can. Now for the next half hour, I'm going to browbeat Tommy with Marvel trivia.
You're the opposite of Jigsaw. You haven't figured out any of this.
Okay.
Yeah, I got to go with Pennywise. I'm so much more interested in Pennywise.
So
you guys are really going to make me break this down.
Yep. Yeah. And you have to explain why.
Right.
I honestly would argue that most of my reasoning is the same as before. And I'm a massive Killmonger fan and wanted to know more about what he's done, what he's going to do, and the kind of even where he would want to have gone. I think that even in Black Panther, while I understand why they did it in the movie, mm-hmm. I would have liked for there to be, it's like, I would have liked to be there some way for him to win so he can kind of continue his arc somewhere else or just live, right? But then his last words before dying, iconic. that really hit me. And so it was like, Killmonger.
I will allow it. But watch yourself, counselor.
Okay. Good work. Okay.
We did it.
Yay.
Friendship wins.
Teams win. teamwork always makes the dream work.
Yep.
Okay. All right. So our next challenge before us, gentlemen, is to tackle the list challenge. And the list challenge that was brought to us today from our predecessors is Movies to Dine By. And so what I'm curious, without putting my thumb on the scale yet, is how did you two approach this topic? Especially since, Kyle, you were able to be a part of the creation of this topic.
So
you had an approach already at the time. So how did you approach the topic?
No, I was making a lot of cannibalism jokes, which maybe is where somebody went. So I don't want to take that away. But no, what I decided to do as I sat and thought about that, because I I wanted to make it bigger so it wasn't just about, you know, movies about eating or something. My particular take on this was dinner parties in movies that I would want to be invited to. Like, there are a lot of them where you don't want to be at that table.
Right.
You know, there's the invitation. I won't even name someone because you guys might have taken some of them. But that is the tactic that I went with. And so my first one of this is actually an interesting choice. It's not something that I think would be sort of stereotypically as attached to me, but I like a good dinner conversation. And so I would want to be invited to a very, very famous round table, Mrs. Parker and the Vicious Circle.
Oh, fun.
I think that would be a fascinating dinner conversation. I would probably be slaughtered by them and never invited back, but I would remember it for the rest of my life. It's not a particularly fantastic movie, but I love that that Algonquin Round Table is still to this day is like some of the greatest collection of artists and writers and things that all came together.
I love that answer. That movie had fallen off my, because she went around, that's Jennifer Jason Leigh.
It is.
She went around a couple movies doing that act.
Yes.
Like, because she did that in the Coen Brothers movie. Which one was that?
Hudsucker Proxy.
Hudsucker Proxy, yeah. I like that. I want to see that movie again. I'm writing it down.
Yeah.
So you can say the name of this movie again?
Mrs. Parker and the Vicious Circle.
It's about Dorothy Parker.
It's about Dorothy Parker, yeah. And the Algonquin Round Table. I think Favreau's in that, too.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And I spell vicious.
Is it okay
tell us what your criteria.
I have like a different criteria.
Absolutely.
The one that I did is a movie that I saw that had a scene that actually made me hungry.
Oh, very nice.
So not like just a whole eating food, but like had one where I was like, if I could jump into the movie right now and have some of what they're eating, I would love to.
Yes.
So for my third pick, it's a weird pick, and people might be like, huh? But maybe when I describe the scene, I don't remember what they call. It's a certain type of meal preparation, but it's cheap packaged noodles like ramen or udon, but then you mix it with really high class meat like steak or sirloin. And one of the characters has to, at the last second, throw this together for her very rich employer. If you even remember it, it's the movie Parasite.
Oh,
the wife
wow.
has to throw that together at the last second because they order it on the way home. And it looks terrible, 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 and then so good. And they have this long conversation while she's slurping the noodles and eating the steak. And I remember just wanting that very, very badly. Okay. So Parasite, weird choice, so right?
Your description of it just made me hungry.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Oh, that sounds
like,
amazing.
That doesn't sound bad at all. Well,
how did you do it?
Okay, yeah, how'd you approach it?
I see we've definitely approached it three different ways. Okay. So I think we may not have any steals.
That's fun.
So really, I guess then the way I ended up approaching this was more about, scenes around dinner or around a dinner or around a meal or things about a meal in the movie that were very memorable to me. Right. Either the meal itself was pivotal or what they were doing around the table is pivotal or something like that. Right. Or, you know, so that's kind of where I went with it. And then I decided that if my list were an episode of Sesame Street, it would be brought to you by the letter H.
Interesting.
And so I just found with it.
Yes. Okay.
Well, yes and no. I say that because I have my little tagline for each one of them. So my first one is about when dining is hilarious. And so it's about dining being hilarious. So now I picked this one first in my list because my list takes a definite turn later. So I wanted to start with something fun. And
Freddy Krueger makes a sandwich.
And we're like, great. Exactly. Yeah. And it was the dinner. It is the dinner scene in the movie Beetlejuice.
Oh.
When Harry Belafonte's Deo starts playing during dinner and the entire cast starts lip syncing and dancing to the song and everything and doing all that. It was great fun and really, I really enjoyed the scene. I liked the movie. And while it did not make me hungry, it did make me want to kind of be a part of that dinner party. So
that's a great choice. I completely forgot about that.
Beetlejuice.
Yeah. I love it.
That was fun. Yeah, in the musical, they do a fun version of it, too, because it gets way wilder.
Have you seen the musical in real life?
There's a Beetlejuice musical. Yeah, and it's really good.
I've just listened to the soundtrack.
Yeah, I've seen the bootleg. So yeah, unfortunately, I've not made it out to go. But it is now on tour. So like, it's coming here.
Oh, excellent!
This time next year. So I mean, so check your local listings. Yeah. It's making the rounds.
Come to the Pantages. Okay, yeah. Cool. Hopefully, I'll have to check it out. I have we have season tickets to the Broadway here at Portland. Nice. It's Broadway in Portland, so it's like whenever the shows travel around, more and more of them are making it out here now, which is
great.
Yeah.
All right. So my next one, Kyle. Let's see. So, and like Tommy was talking about, when unexpected guests come over and they come and they raid your entire pantry and make a thing. I think it would be a very loud, rambunctious meal. But that's what it is when you have dwarves that show up at your house. So I'm picking a Hobbit, an unexpected journey. It may be what Bilbo Baggins hates, but I think they put on a really good spread.
Oh, the Hobbit. good choice. I don't care for it.
Neither does Ocean. Let's move on. Yeah.
My second one is I like Italian food.
Yeah.
And the idea of having like a steak and like a real nice tomato sauce and stuff, and maybe onions cut so thin that they liquefy in the pan. I just like the idea of having such an amazing meal in such a horrible place, because they would smell the place up and the hacks would die. This, of course, is the meal they have in prison in Goodfellas.
Oh, wow.
When they smuggle in the really good bread and the wine and stuff. What a horrible place. Uh-huh. But that made me legitimately hungry, because he's slicing the onion, he's slicing the garlic. Oh, that was it, slicing the garlic so thin. And then even though what's-his-name puts too many onions in the sauce, they would love it.
Wow.
So that was my weird choice, was Goodfellas.
Okay. That's a great choice. And I admit, Tommy, your list is making me hungry.
Mm-hmm. But good!
I'm going to, I don't know about, and I maybe you have the same effect on Kyle, but I feel with this next choice, I'm going to fix that.
You shut it down?
Yeah. My choice is not going to make you feel hungry. This is when dining is horrific.
That's okay. The H. Okay.
So I must also admit, as a preface here, that when I first heard this subject, when I heard it on the show, this is the first movie I thought of. And so it is an older 1989 movie. And it is the first movie I ever saw that at the time was rated NC-17.
Mm-hmm.
So how was this, and how was the dining experience in this horrific? Let me tell you how this movie setup is. So there is an English gangster named Albert Spica, or Spica, I'm not really sure. He has taken over a high-class restaurant, and he forces his elegant wife, Georgina, to come with him. And for many scenes of the movie, the dining situations are completely normal, right? Yeah. There's lots of eating, it's great food, it's amazing. But ultimately, Georgina starts having an affair with a regular at the restaurant, Michael. Albert finds out about the affair, tracks down, and tortures and kills Michael. And here is where it turns.
Yep.
So, stricken with grief, Georgina begs the head chef of that of the aforementioned restaurant to cook Michael. And together with all of the people Albert has wronged in the past, she forces him at gunpoint to eat mouthfuls of Michael's cooked body. And the name of this movie is The Cook, the Thief, His Wife, and Her Lover. And it stars, in order of the characters, in the titles, Richard Boringer, Michael Gambian, Helen Mirren, and Alan Howard. Yes, Helen Mirren, speaking of the Queen.
I was just thinking that, yeah.
Yeah. So that was when I first heard the title, not only the subject, but then also your cannibalism jokes.
Right.
I was like, oh, this
a really beautiful movie.
Yes, no, it's a really good movie. The ending, and it's part of what was definitely impactful for me at the time of seeing it, is the way the movie progresses. It makes this turn at the end. Like, you're not really expecting it to go this dark.
Right.
Like it has dark moments, and you don't expect everybody to live, but like I wasn't expecting this.
Right.
So,
goes full Titus Andronicus at the end. Literary reference, 10 points.
Hey-o!
All right. Yeah. So shifting tonally. So as I've gotten older, I had assumed as a young person that I would go in for the fancy stuff. When you get to be an adult, you would want to go to all the fancy meals. And there's plenty of movies that have really fancy meals with all this ornate cutlery and all these kind of things. But it never happened. I still am much more of a fan of a cookout, more the simple thing. And it really goes back to, I think, that essence of what you think of when you think of a fantastic meal, like a huge meal laid out. And I think that there is no movie that shows what a kid thinks of what a fantastic meal is better than Hook. When the kids sit down and imagine, and then suddenly it, in that beautiful Spielberg way, pulls back and shows you the kid's dream of what a fantastic meal would be, just piles and plates of the most delicious looking things, and just by hand they just dig into it and start eating too. I think that would be a meal that you would never forget. Never forget.
I like it. A meal that will never grow up. What? My third choice is very, very conventional.
In its unconventionality.
Meaning this is a very food obsessed movie. But what made me hungry wasn't the main food. It was this one scene where this entire movie, a retired cook opens a food truck and he has to travel around because he wants to make Cubano sandwiches. And he has meat and he has the stuff and they're always eating it and everything like that. Exactly right. But I was never that turned on by the Cubano sandwiches. I don't even know if that's how you say it. Instead, there's this one scene where he makes a grilled cheese on an open range stove. And it is the greatest grilled cheese I have ever seen. And I think I hurt my hand because I tried to reach through the screen. This is Jon Favreau's Chef.
He famously adores that movie. Yeah, that is such a lot, like a it never got its due or whatever.
Right.
We actually just watched it again a couple months ago, and it's
so much fun. The recipe for it, it's Roy Choi's recipe for grilled cheese. He taught him how to make it, and it's available online, and I have made it, and it's outstanding.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, that has now shot to the top of my list. I'm going to absolutely do that too, because I remember that scene and thinking the exact same thing. Not a big fan of the Cubano sandwiches, but that grilled cheese.
But all right, Ocean, take us home.
All right. Well, I'm going to bring this down. Okay.
The cook, the thief, her wife, and her lover, too.
Exactly. Yeah. So this one is When Dining is Historic. So my final movie is a straightforward drama about a true historic event where a group of patriots gather together at a commanding officer's house for a long meeting over multiple meals. These men all really love their country, and our host is working with them in order to help their country, currently involved in a war, create a plan to solve a great problem they have and figure out a way to end the war victorious.
Does the host arrive by plane by chance?
In fact, he does. And these men all hold different ranks in their country, so there is backstabbing and political intrigue throughout. And honestly, to recommend this movie to Tommy even more, although I get the feeling you already know what it is, the entire movie takes place at one house.
Yeah. It's one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yes, the movie's called Conspiracy. And where does this pick take a turn, you ask? Well, our host is named Heydrich. The movie is set in 1940s and he's a Nazi. And the problem they're trying to solve is what the Nazis should do about the Jews in Germany and Europe. The movie itself is gripping, well acting. The stars Kenneth Branagh, Stanley Tucci, and it's great. But to be fair, it is a tough subject to sit through, especially given the point of view in which the story is being told.
It's one of my favorite movies of all time, which I know that seems to make me a creep, but it's contained. it's like a movie long bottle episode, figuring out and just these people figuring out the final solution rationally, and it's just it's magnificent. Yeah. It's really rough, but it's magnificent.
Who directed that?
Good choice. It was an HBO movie.
It was an HBO movie. It was, directed by Frank Pearson.
Okay.
I highly recommend it, but it is tough.
Yeah, you know, it is one of my.
I was curious if Branagh had directed it because he tends to do that.
No, this one he was just acting, and it is also one of my favorite movies of all time. It is great and gripping. You know, they're not only what they're doing, but then also it was kind of that an interesting eye opening thing of how. You know, to try to present this idea rationally, which is what
the banality of evil. And it's so funny. Right. Okay.
I have never heard of this movie before. So that's fascinating. And now I'm going to put that on my list. Yeah. You guys have sold me on. Yep.
Excellent. All right.
I'm going to break my Nazi rule and watch this.
Yeah. Yes. Hooray. All right. So we have completed. So now.
I'm going to watch Raiders of the Lost Ark just to purge.
Got it.
Just to
right the wrong.
Yeah.
Right,
exactly. Get it out. Yeah. All right. So now our next task is to come up with a list for the host of next week, which I will scan through here to see if I can find who they are. Next week it is Pete, Mandy, and our returning champion Kyle.
I know.
Oh my gosh. So,
yeah, I know. Don't worry. It's the end of my run. I'm going out with a bang. Don't worry. And after that, you won't. Yeah. I happened to step in for someone. It was never intended that I was going to be 3 weeks in a row.
All right. So,
trying to be a mensch, this is what happens. Ordinarily, I would not put forth an idea first. However, something came up as we were talking. I was thinking something along lines of good movies with terrible titles, because that has been a recurring thing this evening.
Okay. Oh, that's fun.
Okay.
Are you talking about Night Teeth?
Night Teeth was part of it.
I really like that. The only other idea that I had was movies that deserve a prequel.
Oh, that's
because we were talking about heroes and stuff, that it could be movies that deserve a prequel.
And to give us a third choice to think to the noodle around, so that way we can, you know, kind of bounce out is so my thought was basically because of my ignorance of, you know, of the royal family and everything that we talked about before, that movies that feature Succession.
How do we decide?
Well,
I've never been one with this many ideas before.
I don't know if Kyle wants to try to put his thumb on the scale or not, because he'll be So then I guess really, Tommy, there are good movies, terrible sequels, movies that deserve a prequel. Oh, look at that. No, good movies with terrible titles. Mm-hmm. Did I say good movies with terrible sequels?
Yeah, that's all right.
good movies with terrible sequels.
I haven't been listening to you this whole time.
Movies that deserve a prequel. That's there you go. That could be the fourth title. Good movies with terrible sequels. That's like, you know, most of them. So
is good, movie, so good movies with terrible titles, is that a big enough? I love that idea, but are there a lot of well-known movies with terrible titles?
I guess that I thought it would be, it's pretty subjective.
Yeah.
Because, you know,
because it also could be just like a title like Edge of Tomorrow. Like that is a terrible title because it doesn't have anything to do with anything.
Exactly. Like, I thought it'd be up to the individual person to decide what they consider a terrible title. Like,
yeah,
I'll say do television. I think the television show Lost is a terrible title because also it's really hard to search for anything more.
Right. ever since the movie Coda came out. The fact that we use Coda has been really difficult as a doc. I like the title,
just throwing out things for the people next week, you know? So, like,
right.
Yeah. No, that's why I said I was doing television just because of that.
I like the idea of the title thing. I think that could be funny.
Okay. So you like that better than the idea of the movies that deserve a prequel?
Than your own idea?
I think so. Yeah.
There's the movies that deserve a prequel, comma, and you have to pitch it.
Oh.
I don't know how much we're allowed to make it into a third game.
I think you've just created a different
this
podcast.
This is just the list challenge.
Okay. You can't pitch it? Okay. Yeah. Fair enough. All right.
Copyright 2022.
Yeah.
Okay. Ocean.
Yeah. All right. So you would prefer to. So is that what you think, Tommy? Good movie, terrible titles?
I think so.
Okay. All right, we will let Kyle, since Kyle really is the reigning and defending champion of the Saturday Matinee Podcast.
I feel like such a winner.
We will let him decide what it is, because to be the man, you got to beat the man, and right now Kyle's the man. So, good movies with terrible titles it is.
And the important part is good movies, because otherwise you could just choose like Uncle Ernie's Fart Factory Roller Chase. Like, it has to be like a real movie.
I had a thing on my wall in college that I pulled. There was actually a movie, and I can't remember the whole thing because it's ridiculous long, but it was like like night of the day of the dawn of the beginning of the end. And it was like, it just went on. It's just so ridiculous. So yeah, that wasn't the point. It was good movies
with terrible titles. I love it. Good choice. We did it.
Yes. I'm gonna take that prequel one and put that in my pocket.
So. Yes, because that one I feel like could really go good. Anytime.
That's really good. Yeah. So yeah, that definitely needs to happen.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Awesome. Well, it was great. And hey, gentlemen, and don't forget that you can get longer and ad-free versions of the Saturday Matinee by becoming a supporting member of the Next Reel family of film podcasts. Visit thenextreel.com/membership to learn more. And if you're wondering what movies The Next Reel is going to be talking about in the coming weeks and months, you can visit our HQ page on Letterboxd, where you'll find a list of all the movies in the 2022 season. And while you're there, Letterboxd is offering a discount to anyone listening to The Next Reel. Just use the code NEXTREEL, all caps, no spaces, at checkout, and you can upgrade your Letterboxd account to Pro or Patron with a 20% off discount. This discount also works for renewals. So, Kyle, what's going on next with you in the podcast universe?
Nothing. All my stuff is in development. However, what I did find the title that I was talking about. So in 1991, the title is Night of the Day of the Dawn of the Sun of the Bride of the Return of the Revenge of the Terror of the Attack of the Evil Mutant Alien Flesh-Eating Hellbound Zombified Living Dead.
That's awesome.
Wow.
I can't top that.
That's great. That is you a know great what? Poster. I really wanted that movie. I want that movie to be good, so you could use it.
Right. Well, apparently it's terrible, but they did make yeah. five of them, and so I'm not going to read all the titles. But yeah, they just kept adding words to it.
Oh, they added words. Yeah. So it wasn't like the same title part two.
No. And it also was part two, but they just kept adding words into the thing too.
Oh wow. Awesome. All right, Tommy, what's coming up next with you?
Uncle Pete and I are hard at work on season 7 of What's That Smell? The fun and sometimes funny podcast about humans and their anxieties. We already have banked about 3, and then the trailer is going to be coming out very soon. If you have an anxiety you would like us to discuss, you can be as anonymous as you want. Go to whatsthatsmell.net and submit it there. The end.
Well, awesome. Well, thank you. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.
Go do something nice for yourself.
I love the conversations that so many of our hosts have had on their shows. Steve and JJ on Trailer Rewind, Ray and Ocean on Silver Linings, even Tommy's short-lived No, No, Wait, Hear Me Out.
And so many films they've discussed started out as a book, a play, or even a TV series.
Well, now you can support our whole family of podcasts by using our new Originals page to buy the original source material used to inspire films covered on our shows.
Just visit thenextreel.com/originals. Your purchases made through our links give us a small commission at no extra cost to you and allow us to keep having these fantastic conversations.
It's a wonderful way to support the show. Producing these podcasts week after week require a ton of work behind the scenes. If you'd like to help support our efforts, try using our Originals page when shopping for books and movies that we've covered.
It's your one-stop shop for Amazon and Apple links where you can buy the book, play, video game, movie, etc., upon which the movie is based.
Original material for Trailer Rewind movies like If Beale Street Could Talk,
The Goldfinch,
Aniara,
or The Two Faces of January.
Or Silver Linings movies like Repo Men, which was based on The Repossession Mambo.
Plus, by using those links to buy books, Amazon and Apple show us a little bit of love, which allows you to support our family of shows with minimal effort.
Visit thenextreel.com/originals. It's a fantastic way to support the show and find a great book to read.
That's right. Head over to thenextreel.com/originals to find your next read and get started today.